Well, Robert, why are we here?
I'll tell you why we're here. We're here for an exciting show that we're promoting right now. This is our first episode of Dr. Renewable. We are going to talk about renewable energy, and I know that's very close to your heart.
Oh, yeah. So do you want introducing yourself?
I'm Robert, and this is Eric. And I think we'll forego the last names because you might find out where Eric lives and stone his house one day. But so we'll keep it nice and light for now.
Yeah. We don't want people to remember the fabulous Fabro, right?
or the crazy Bebo.
Okay.
Yeah, so we're going to have some exciting shows on Dr. Renewable. We're going to have some guests. We're going to have on-the-street comments. Some of our guests are going to be extremely exciting. And a lot of the time, we're just going to be about renewable energy and what we can do right now.
Yeah, we want to do public radio. We just want to increase awareness into renewable energy because we're reaching a critical stage in mankind. And we're looking for solutions that will work right now.
Okay, but why a public radio show?
Well, public radio, this is because this is our first broadcast. We're just testing the waters on it. We eventually want to get it across Canada, across North America.
So, Robert, you must have like a pretty exotic PhD in renewable energy or in policy on renewable energy, right? Like your background must be quite exhaustive for being up here.
Thanks, Eric. I'm more the social aspect of it. I'm more the political swings by far. We are very interested. My expertise is people and how people think and why they think that way. Now, on the other hand, Dr. Bebo, you must have a very big background in social sciences.
Oh, me, social science. Yes, in engineering, we did a lot of study on social science. I think my social science was obtained outside the university, and I think I'm going to be lacking in that respect, right? Yeah. So do I gather that when you're in school, you were mostly missing school and like hopping it around and doing all sorts of stuff on the social scene? And
it could be true.
It could be true.
But, you know, I do have a few degrees behind my belt.
So, Robert, let's start with something very, very important. Okay. Let's go look at the carbon clock. What do you think the carbon clock is saying today?
Well, the carbon clock is going up, and it's going up, and it's going up. And right now, Eric, we're reaching a very serious part of mankind. Like I said before, if people knew about the carbon clock and they looked at it once a week, once every day, they'd start thinking about renewable energies that they can use right now.
Okay, what it means. But right now, it's at 4:30. And let's go look at the units. What's the units, Robert?
I don't know. Parts per million.
So parts per million. So it's important to first understand that without CO2, we'd be a frozen Earth. You know what that means?
Yeah, I do know what it means. I mean, the Earth is largely made up of carbon. But from
No. What would happen if that number was zero?
We'd be living in an ice age.
We'd be more than an ice age. So that number goes to an ice age around 200. So if that number is too low, we actually get an ice age. And what happens, for example, in Winnipeg, when there's an ice age, how many kilometers of ice do we have over ahead?
Well, Lake Agassiz, the last time they measured it was over 3 kilometers of ice.
3 kilometers of ice on top. Okay. So basically that blanket, that CO2 greenhouse gas is a fairly important regulation of Earth's temperature, right?
It's very important. Now, I know we'll get into this later, but there are different types of carbon in the atmosphere.
Well, so you're talking about different types of greenhouse gases that are equivalent to carbon.
That's what I'm talking about, Doc.
So basically what it is when I make a social faux pas, you correct me. And then when you make maybe a small technical glitch, okay.
Or even a large technical
glitch. So it's important that we take our strength and compensate each other, right?
Exactly.
Because we're quite old. Okay, you're right. So CO2 is, there's more than one greenhouse gases, but the dominant one is CO2. What's the next dominant one?
Methane.
methane. And do you know, if I tell you the global warming potential, what do you think it means to a layperson, like the global warming potential of methane?
From what I understand, and I could be wrong, methane is a smaller portion, but it does last longer.
Okay, so there's charts that dictate the global warming potential. It basically says how much more does it cause a blanketing, a warming compared to CO2. So methane is about, it gets revised, but let's just say for purpose of this show, we'll say 28. It's okay. More of a range, okay? So what would be the another one that you could think of greenhouse gas?
Well, let's take this back one step, okay. Doc. If we're heading for a warmer climate, because of greenhouse gases, what's the problem? I live in Winnipeg. It's cold out here.
Oh, that's, I've heard this often in Manitoba. We're going to have some guests on this show, and we'll see some of the numbers of what's going to happen in like 50 years. So imagine, put yourself 50 years and we're both 10 feet under, okay? And we look at Manitoba, and all of a sudden, the occurrence of the temperature in the summer being above 30 degrees Celsius starts to really, really increase in the number of days of less rain and or flood. So from a climate change perspective, we're heading into a situation of larger change, okay? It's not that the CO2 has not changed over the year. Like, do you know what would be the maximum temperature the Earth ever experienced in terms of temperature increase due to CO2?
I do not know that.
Okay, so that's a bit from historical records and from various scientific studies. It will have gone to as high as 14 degrees Celsius, but humans weren't on the planet. Actually, in fact, humans have never been on the planet above 400 parts per million. And how much are we today?
430. So we're going beyond what humans have gone before.
Yes.
Sounds like a Star Trek episode.
But I remember when we hit 400. Would you know approximately when this was?
It was in the last 20 years, I believe.
Well, I think it's more like 8 to 9 years. So what happened is I remember it was a sensor in Hawaii, and it was the first time that it picked up 400, okay? 400 was a milestone because humans have never walked the Earth above 400, okay? Now, when the...
Just clarification, yeah. On this, it's 400 globally, so it's an average temperature as a global thing. It's not a one continent, one country. It's a global temperature.
Yes.
That means Arctica, Antarctica, all combined with Sahara Desert. Yeah.
Okay, first of all, you mixed two concepts, parts per million and temperature.
Okay.
So let's backtrack. When we get confusion, Robert is here to represent the average layman, yeah. And I'm here to make sure I don't confuse people. So I think between me and you, we might be getting onto something. Okay. So, yes, when you're doing 400 parts per million, I mean, if you go a bit deeper, now you're going into the realms that it's going to take a lot of study and a lot of knowledge to get there. So what we say 400 parts per million or 430, it's a global average. Okay, a global average. And right now I'd like you to step away and you're in space, maybe on the... on the SpaceX rocket that's going out to Mars one day or to the moon. And what I'd like you to do is just look at the Earth. So you're seeing the Earth. And now I want to take your two fingers. I want you to stretch your two finger, and I want you to measure the thickness of the atmosphere from way out in space. So you see the Earth. And I want you to take your two fingers, and I want you to estimate in front of your eyes, like, how big would your fingers be apart when you're just looking at the Earth's atmosphere?
I'd say so. But...
But why is that important, Robert?
You know, because it's the atmosphere is extremely fragile. It's not that big. It's something that we have to take care of, and we don't.
So basically, in other words, when we're out at in the night and we're looking at the stars in front of the fire, right? And we're looking out, we may have an idea that the atmosphere is very big, or very thick, right? But the atmosphere is actually very thin. Let's agree around 8 kilometers. Okay, so once in a while, we're going to talk about the global commons. Okay, what's your understanding of the global commons?
Quite frankly, I have never heard that terminology before, so I think we need a little bit of enlightenment.
Oh, well, we could go online, but maybe let me enlighten you.
Light me up.
Well, the story goes that...
The story goes.
I haven't checked it out for a few years, but in the times of royalty, right, the global commons was the area by the side of the road where peasants could go and grab some food. So there was a certain area, okay, X amount of distance from the road that peasants can go and get it, right? Get food, right? So it's called the global commons. And I think if you're looking at our city here, the front yard, actually the first couple of feet belongs to the city, right?
Correct, yes.
Now, did you ever think of using that productively, my friend, the city property of that 3-4 feet that we don't own? Have you ever thought of using...
Yeah, matter of fact, there are a lot of communities within the area here that do use it. Unfortunately, not for... Well, fortunately, unfortunately, not for food production, but definitely for flowers and growth, green space. Right now, that common area, we look after it ourselves. So there should be no restrictions on using it for, growth of anything.
So guess what I wanted to do with that common area?
Make the road wider?
No, I was going to put my solar panels on a stand, and when the inspector came in, it would rotate back onto my property.
Oh, right. Okay.
And that was really to challenge the city. And after all, they did give me a huge amount of effort to license my solar panels and my Tesla battery here. It took about 5 years. It's only when I threatened to take them to court that they got resolved. Okay. Well,
that sounds like a whole episode right there.
Oh, no, I'm not going to relive the trauma, Robert.
We're going to relive the trauma. Because a lot of people out there are very suspect of it. And is this going to be a big, huge pain in the you-know-where?
So let's go back to the global common, because it's going to be a theme on this show, so that when you say, well, does this affect the global common, right? So the global common is the atmosphere, okay? It's thin. And we think there's a lot, okay, but it's not that much, okay? You got to understand, like, in terms of mass, I know you didn't think about this when you went to school and in sociology, but let's look at the difference in mass between the ocean and the air. What do you think is the ratio of the mass?
Ocean covers 2/3 of the surface,
okay,
which is pretty accurate. The air, it covers all the surface, but if you say it's 8 kilometers thick.
And the average ocean depth is 2.5 kilometers, right?
Yes.
And its density is like about 800 times more. So then we could start thinking that the amount of molecules in the air is not that much.
That's very true.
Okay.
But also the ocean does sequester a large amount of carbon also.
Yes. And the carbon that we took out of the earth is going to go back in the ocean long term.
Yes.
Okay? Not in the short term. But the global commons is the fact that when we're talking about greenhouse gases, okay, and what's happening, we really have to think of the global commons. So what do you think is happening in terms of how are we addressing climate change right now? What's your perspective on it?
Well, actually, the climate, what we have right now for technology, we can reverse it, make it stable. Between solar, wind, kinetic turbines, wave energy, geothermal, those concepts we can do right today, and we have to. Some people are doing them right today, in smaller portions. But a lot of people don't see the large picture or the interconnection part of the energy sector.
Let's make it very clear that every year, okay, that number is going up at a certain amount. So if we everybody go look at the carbon clock, Bloomberg carbon clock, it's 430. But what's really happening right now is we're putting about 2.6 extra parts per million every year. So what happens when you make a soup? Like, I know you don't cook that much, Robert, for an Italian, okay? We still often eat more at my house than your house, by the way. But then we have fresh microgreens. The house is a bit more renewable than yours, you know.
KFC.
Hey. Okay.
And look what it did to you so far.
So what's happening in terms of when you put a pinch of salt to the soup and you do it every time? You always add a pinch of salt.
Well, salt does add flavor, but also increases the temperature of the liquid.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, no, doesn't it move the boiling point?
No. That's what I said, just in a more relaxed way.
I think you were in Israel in the hot sea there, in the Dead Sea there, and it was super hot there. Okay. So we did a slight correction. So yes, salt increases the boiling point. Okay, but it's going to get salty. Eh? So let's look at the Earth right now. We're adding a CO2 and CO2 equivalent, and we're adding a pinch of salt. And in terms of geological time, we're doing it very fast. So imagine adding a pinch of salt every 1 second. That's how fast we're adding it. You know, what do you think is going to happen to the soup? When are you going to have to restart over?
Very soon, because that's that mushy, glucky, non-tasty soup.
Okay, so in Dr. Renewable, we're going to have to always talk about the same numbers, and we're going to do a lot of repetition, okay? Well, why is repetition important in sociology?
Repetition is extremely important. We could even go back to the Catholic Church saying the rosary. You say it enough times, it starts to sink in.
Okay, so we're going to basically apply the rosary to Dr. Renewable. Is that your strategy?
No, it was an example.
It was an example. Okay.
We're gonna talk about renewables very repetitively, but in new and exciting ways. We'll talk about electric cars. We'll talk about batteries. We'll talk about solar. But we won't be saying the same thing over and over again, but the message definitely will be the same.
Okay, so the message is going to be, okay, I'm trying to put a few chess pieces on the board here. We got 430, we got about 2.6 parts per million every year. Now I'm going to put another chess piece on the board. That's an important one. And here what I'm going to do is I'm going to look at nature. And nature is not an environmentalist. Okay, she transacts in much higher values of CO2 than we do. Okay, so I need to beef up the numbers here. Okay, so we saw GHGs, okay, but I need you to understand that compared to man, nature produces about 20 times more GHG per year than us from fossil fuel burning and agriculture. So, but if she produces about 20 times than we do, every year. What do you think she also does at the same time?
She sequesters back into nature, which is what we're looking at. Whereas the fossil fuels that we're using, primarily from the gas and oil industry, primarily from the coal industry.
Well, actually, if you look at our federal government, its big policy forward is that we will sequester. And after about 20 years of looking at this and putting huge amount of money into it, how much do you think we sequester in Canada?
Well, you know, that's one of the subjects we're going to get into in some of the book review.
Well, I think I'm going to introduce a little concept on the table, okay? And then we'll come back to it. And we don't have to define everything on the first show, but it's really part of the apartheid against renewables. So as the show develops, I'm going to go in and ask you, what does the apartheid against renewable? But it's basically saying mankind and federal government and or Canadian government is trying just about every way not to do what is required. And right now I'm going to pull the white elephant into the room. Okay.
Absolutely.
So we're going to enter the white elephant. And the white elephant is that on Earth, we use 18 to 20 terawatts of energy. Okay. So that's 10 to the 15 watts per second. Okay. So how many kilowatts do you think your house uses in terms of electricity?
I haven't got two. Okay.
About two. Oh, very good, Robert.
No, I saw two fingers.
Well, think about it. If you're using two at 10 cents, that's 20 cents a day. That's like 14, 20 cents times 14 is about $2.50 a month, you know? So about that, okay? So that's 10 to the 3, okay? We're consuming at 10 to the 15, okay? So 10 to the 15, yes. So the white elephant... What's the percentage of the 18 to 20 terawatts is fossil fuels versus renewable energy?
There's very little renewable energy being used today that we could use, which is really surprising. One of the big stats that just blows me away is 8 hours of sunlight produces enough energy to run the world for a year. If we capture
it. Ooh, you've been studying, my friend. Oh my God. It's like you're gonna replace me. Actually, another way of saying that is that the renewable energy ratio, the percentage of renewables that we operate the earth is about 10% right now. In Canada, what do you think in Canada it is?
I believe it's a little bit higher. I know that from the educational sociological reviews that be done, the higher the education, the more chance you're going to do some sort of renewable energies.
Yes, okay, from a socials perspective, but Canada's renewable energy ratio is 19%.
Okay.
I need to stress that Trudeau doesn't know that. Okay, so Robert, when we're talking about Dr. Renewable, can you explain to the audience what the segues are going to be?
We're going to do a number of segues, Eric. We're going to talk about, we're going to do a man on the street segue, just to see what he thinks. And
now, Robert, is it socially correct to say a man on the street right now?
Well, you know, Eric, me being a social person, you know, it's not probably right. The social person on the street, okay? And we're doing some in Canada, some in the United States, some in Mexico. We've got a couple of people from China talking, so we're going to segue into those.
So you're talking about street talk, right?
Street talk, exactly right. And we're going to get an opposing point of view. We're going to call him Mr. Grumpy, because this guy does not be, he's part of the 26% of the population that does not believe in climate change, and he's got his views. Political, personal, whatever, he's gonna lay it on us. We're also going to talk about books, okay? So the books on climate change, we've got some very, very interesting books that we have dug out. Some are extremely controversial, and some and the books are a little bit of an eye-opener for a lot of people, and we're going to suggest whether you should read them or not, but we're going to give you our kind of honest opinion on it.
And we're going to have a rating scheme where I'm going to rate them, you're going to rate them, and then we'll compare our ratings.
Exactly. And the fourth, we're going to talk about music. I grew up in the 60s and 70s, and protest music was really, really strong. We were protesting against the Vietnam War, protesting against this and that. I think in today's day and age, the youth is starting to protest against climate change and how we're not doing enough for it, or the government's not doing enough for it. So we're going to take a look at the social aspects of how we can use the music as they did in the 60s and 70s, the books, the talking shows, how we can get the whole elevation of renewable energy out there where people have the choices, you know, to look at how they can help protect the earth.
And this is going to be our book. This is you reading the book.
That's me reading the book.
Okay. Turning the pages. Hey, we have the technology. First of all, thanks for a sponsorship from NEIA.
It's a commercial right there.
There we go. Yeah.
And what's NEIA?
Manitoba Energy.
What?
Industry Association. And who do we have to thank?
It was money. I mean,
and who do we have to thank?
Both of us.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're also going to, maybe you didn't get the full memo here. So we're also going to do news. Okay. Oh, so we're going to review news.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
And we'll review news from two different perspectives. Okay. We're also going to do why questions. So what kind of questions do you have about renewable energy and like technology? What would you like to learn?
Well, I know what I'd like to learn. I'm a firm believer that and if you are doing something to start off with, you want to get the most you can get, the little hanging fruit, we call it, what we can do right now at a very reasonable cost.
Okay.
And so, that's what I'm looking for.
So we're definitely going to look at what I can do. How about multiple choice? That's going to be a quiz between me and you, right?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I hate to see you go down flames like that.
Oh, my God. Yeah. And we're going to look at rebate programs, renewable energy project, and then we'll keep a scorecard. That means looking at the numbers. Why are numbers important, even though you're in psychology? Even in sociology, you guys have numbers.
We have numbers, in fact, for a lot of things. But more importantly, when people are looking at renewables, they're looking at cost and return right now. So it's very short term. They're not thinking long term. What about the return for their grandkids or their great grandkids or even their children right now? So cost is a monetary factor. Yes, it is. Most people think about it. But we have to change that thinking a little bit around because the renewables are getting less money and more efficient. But long term, what you're going to do for your kids and your grandkids, how are you going to leave this lovely planet? My whole philosophy for my whole life has been leave the place a better place than what you found it. And that's what we'd certainly like to do for the climate.
And the other thing that we may add on that philosophy is, if you want to know if something is right,
yep,
think what happens if 8 billion people do it. So it's not that I'm an engineer. It's not that the car is wrong. It's not that the auto cycle is wrong. It was developed under a certain conditions where we want to replace maybe a few thousand, 10,000 horses. But what happens is you could no longer use a system of energy production when it was not designed for 8 billion. So I want to stress, it's not that people made mistakes, is they were given a certain specification and the idea that polluting or imposing a huge amount of CO2 in the atmosphere, NOx and various constituents, is now creating a problem for the Earth. And engineers, if you give them the right specification, what will they do?
Well, engineers have this tendency, they want to make it better.
Well, they'll solve it. They'll solve it, right?
Solve it, yeah.
With 5,000 times more energy from the sun hitting the Earth's surface than we require to operate the Earth at 18 terawatts, yep. 5,000 is quite a lot. Now, tell me why most people say it is impossible to do. We can't possibly run the Earth on renewable energy because we only have 5,000 times more hitting the surface of the Earth and 10,000 times more hitting the outside of the atmosphere. So why is 1 in 5,000 so much, so hard?
That's perception. It's perception that's brought out by, we call it dark money. There's
Ooh, what is that, Robert? What is dark money?
Dark money?
Could I have a bit of it?
Oh, Robert, I can hear the end of the show just going out very smooth here.
Mellow here. Mellow, mellow, mellow. Tell me about the Red Cup.
No, we don't have time for that. I think it's on episode 2. See you next week.
Next week.